Not going back to the office, the future of remote work. As restrictions lift, life is inching towards normal. But normal won't likely be what it used to be. A big example is the workplace. All over the world, companies and employees, many of whom have not stepped foot in an office for more than a year, are rethinking their expectations and policies about where people do their work. Some companies are planning for an all-remote workplace. Others demand the opposite, that people be back in person. In Maine, about 34% of households had at least one person working remotely during the pandemic. It's not clear how many of those will go back to the office. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we begin a four-part series of programs looking at Maine's evolving economy by looking at the future of remote work. That's next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. At this point in the pandemic, more and more workplaces are reopening and trying to determine what to do about bringing people back to the office or allowing remote work to continue. Today, we'll talk about the various scenarios being debated by employers and workers in Maine. My guest, Tani Alvarez, who is a partner at Verrill Dana Law Firm, specializing in employment law. David Chulo, CEO of Career Management Associates, and Jason Harkins, Associate Dean of the Maine Business School at the University of Maine. We invite your questions and comments. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'd love to hear if you have been working from home or working remotely in another way, if you want that to continue, if you're ready to get back to the office, let us know what you think. And a note here, this program is part of Maine's evolving economy. We're doing a series of Maine Calling shows about how the pandemic is affecting Maine's economy. Well, welcome Tani, David, and Jason to the program today. And Jason, I'll start with you. I understand you've done research involving employers and executives from across the state on how they've been dealing with work arrangements during the pandemic. Give us a broad sense of what you have found out. Like, what stage are people or companies at right now?
Well, thanks for having me. We have been able to sit at the table with some of Maine's major employers, and they're all at this stage of trying to figure out what it is that remote work looks like for them, with a mixture of some employees likely staying remote, some coming back into the office, and some doing that kind of hybrid thing that we're all getting used to again, where you're in the office some days and others not. They've really kind of focused on three major themes or sets of questions that are of interest and part of the conversation. One is really looking at what makes remote programs successful. So some of them have failed historically. Yahoo, right, was known to have brought everyone back to work at one point when they changed over CEOs. So what makes them successful? The second batch is really looking at how do you manage the informal communications that are so important to the success of workplaces and especially cultures. And then the third is, how do you go about onboarding new employees and making the key decisions about who gets to stay remote, who doesn't get to stay remote, who can take Fridays off or work remotely on Fridays? So three big batches and whole series of conversations that exist within there, but some really fascinating conversations and thoughtful Maine employers that are trying to lead the way.
All right, Tani, I want to turn to you. You deal with employment issues. Is it prevalent in your experience that people who have been working remotely want to continue to work remotely, or are people eager to get back to the office?
I think we're seeing a mixture of both. I mean, before the pandemic, we saw employers who were very hesitant to allow employees to work remotely, concerned about performance management issues primarily, and then productivity. But now that so many employers have seen that they can make it work and they can make it work well, and employee satisfaction in a lot of ways is higher, what you're seeing is kind of what Jason just mentioned. It is all a lack of connection or employers really focusing in on how they can connect with employees. You know, they used to have lunches or they used to have donuts, these types of, it sounds like I'm only food based and that employers are only feeding everyone. It's not just food based though. It's that time together. And while employers are trying to do Zoom parties and those fun gifts that maybe arrive sporadically in the mail, they're still struggling to engage and connect to their employees. So I'm seeing a lot of organizations that are bringing people back two or three times a week. And sometimes in jest, I have CEOs and managers saying, we're even going to buy a water cooler. In hopes of having kind of that discussion around the water cooler and connecting with people.
Sure. So interesting. I'll say something that's not food-based, just the running joke that might be going through the office for a few weeks and people are building on it, every single day isn't happening right now. David, I want to know what you're hearing from employers who are trying to figure out. Tani mentioned the words performance and productivity. Are they still talking about that or has the conversation moved to something else?
It really depends on the two different types of workplaces, right? I mean, one of the things we're seeing is that manufacturers have been at work all through this. The essential workers have been there day in, day out. They kind of look at this and go, yeah, we pretty much can't move our CDC machine into your living room. I'm so sorry, you're going to have to come to work. It's just been one of those situations where you do have what we're calling the haves and the have-nots, the ones that have to go to work. And ones that don't have to go to work, they can be at home. The conversation's been very clear in that aspect, is that we probably have seen right now with the employers we work with, half of them are basically requiring them to be at work. And the other half are having this conversation about, okay, we may have you come back, but it might be 3 out of 5 days, 4 out of 5 days. And then the other question that comes up, which to Tawny's point, is this conversation of who has to come to work and who doesn't. You know, job descriptions are being looked at in a completely different way. Is it an essential function that you are at work? Is it an essential function that you're not at work? These are really the questions that employers are asking at the base level, at the HR level, at the C-suite level, to try to look at the workplace in a different way. There is a generational discussion though, and you do see that C-suite level predominantly Boomers or Xers are really having a little bit more of a difficult time of getting people and looking at it from that aspect and dealing with that cultural challenge that Jason and Tawny talked about.
I'm really glad you brought up the generational aspect. I think that's really important, especially as established employers are trying to bring more young people on board. David, it's interesting what you said, though, about the haves and haves nots. I think they're the employees which, in the very beginning, it was obvious that they could work from home. And there are those, like you said, who work with a big CNC machine who are not going to be working from home. But then there are people like me who could never have imagined hosting a radio show from my home, but the engineers figured out a way to make it work. And I do believe there's a whole layer of the economy that never knew something was possible and is suddenly discovering that maybe it is.
Well, you know, it's an interesting conversation. As you know, I have a radio show as well. And one of the conversations was with a demographer who talked about the fact that we have seen a 10-year shift in technology. Things that we thought weren't possible have moved 10 years in rapid speed ahead to make it seem that we've had to, because we had no other choice, to force things that we could do at home or couldn't do at home. It's changed our paradigm. Now, to your point, though, it has not changed the fact that we have not, and most organizations, I think, would agree, done a great job of dealing with that cultural attachment, that retention of employees, which requires from somebody being at work and having that dialogue and feeling connected to their manager past the screen. It's just different. It's different when you're in person. It's different when you're having those conversations. So that's where the challenge still is.
Yeah, and Jason, there's a competitive advantage, isn't there, to some companies who decide to be more flexible in their policies. I read an article just this week about people at companies that are saying you have to come back to work, and they say, oh, really? Well, then I quit. Are you seeing that here in Maine, or is that something that's a sort of a big city issue?
I think that we're starting to see it sorting out. So as based on our conversations, it seems as though this is still the early stages and organizations are figuring out what it means for their culture and what it means for them to define bringing those employees back. But there are employees who have moved away. And they are not coming back if they have to. And the other competitive advantage that can be achieved there is we all have read all the headlines about the kind of war for talent all across the state of Maine, and it extends well beyond our borders. So if you have remote jobs, if you can onboard new employees, bring them along and build that culture, then if you can attract employees that might live in Denver or Seattle to your Maine-based firm and access talent that doesn't exist here, that can be a huge competitive advantage, but it's got to be done right.
Well, we want to talk about that some more. Calling in now, Mark McInerney. He is director of the Center for Workforce Research and Information with the Maine Department of Labor. Thanks so much for joining us, Mark.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Give us an overview. What percentage of workers in Maine switched to telework during the pandemic, remote work?
Yeah, so we have a couple of different sources of information here to answer that question. The census developed a pulse survey in response to the pandemic and started quickly collecting information about folks in their work location, for example. And we found that while it varies throughout the pandemic, about one out of three households in Maine had an adult who was substituting typically in-person work for remote work during that survey, which was in the spring of this year. We identified using occupational information that we produced at the Center for Workforce Research, we identified over 160,000 jobs in Maine that we believe for which telework can be used as a substitute for what was likely in-person work before the pandemic.
How does that compare with the rest of the country?
So our rates of substituting telework were very similar to the national average, but slightly below. Another source of information that we had was a survey of private businesses conducted during the summer of 2020. We found that about 27% of private businesses in Maine reported that they were increasing their telework capacity in response to the pandemic, which was really similar but a little bit below the U.S. national average of 31% private employers that increased their telework during the pandemic.
Mark, I know that with statistics and things like that, often there's a little bit of a lag. So I just wanted to know what your sense is. What's been happening the last few months since more and more people have been vaccinated, since the state has lifted restrictions? Are we seeing a shift already? And whether or not we're seeing a shift already, what do you expect in the months to come?
Yeah, I think, some employers are a little bit further ahead in kind of what their decision making and planning process looks like. And some are further behind where the conversation is still ongoing. I think that right now what we're seeing is employers are considering, all of the benefits to their employees associated with remote work, all the challenges associated with remote work, and they're coming up with plans, I think, right now that try to incorporate the preferences of their employees, their experience that they might have had with telework in the past year. And weighing the benefits of in-person work as well as they're developing plans that I think are kind of, specific to individual employers. So I think we're kind of right in the middle of it right now. Some are starting to have some presence back, whether it's, full in-person or whether it's some kind of hybrid model. And some other employers are still in a phase where they're kind of evaluating and not quite sure what kind of decisions they want to make if there's going to be permanent changes going forward. So I think we're kind of somewhere in the middle.
Well, Mark, I look forward to finding out what you find out in the next few months. I really appreciate you calling in. Mark McInerney with the Department of Labor's Center for Workforce Research and Information. I want to turn back to you, Tawny. You're an attorney, and I'm wondering, what are the legal considerations? What are employees allowed to do, and what rights do employees have in arranging whether they want to work remotely or not?
Yeah, so rights is a broad word. I think we're really looking at whether or not the job's getting done, whether or not the job functions are such that they can work remotely, and having that discussion with employers about why it works best for them culturally and why they should continue to do it. There's limited circumstances or situations where an employee is going to have a quote unquote right under the law to continue to work from home. And that's going to be in the Americans with Disabilities Act reasonable accommodation dialogue, or similarly under Maine law, under the Maine Human Rights Act. So if an individual has a disability and one way in which an employer can reasonably accommodate that disability is by permitting the employee to work from home, that might be a situation in which continued remote working could be available. But at the same time, if there's another accommodation that could be provided that an employer believes better fits their needs and still is reasonable and can account for the individual's disability, they can't be mandated to allow the employee to continue to work remotely. So a quote unquote right doesn't exist to continue to work from home.
Well, let me ask you a question that I think a lot of people will have. If I have a condition in which my immune system is suppressed and I've been working from home and I just don't want to go back to work because it's a big company and there's no guarantee everybody's been vaccinated. Is that fall under the ADA?
Yeah, it's a really good question. In that discussion, we're going to have, it's called a reasonable accommodation dialogue with the employee. We're going to find out with that suppressed immune system, what have they been doing throughout the course of the pandemic? Are they going into grocery stores? Are they going into retail locations? Are they otherwise engaging with the public in a similar way in which they potentially would be asked to do at work? Are there other precautions that we could take to reasonably protect the individual, masking, social distancing, increased sanitization, all of those elements. Additionally, this is one of those really tough moments where as a lawyer, I don't have a public health background or a deep science background either. So we're keeping really on top of the public health information to determine, okay, if everyone else in the office is vaccinated, does that increase the risk to somebody who's unvaccinated but has a compromised immune system if they were to come into the office? So I think that a compromised immune system, inability to be vaccinated, those would all be factors that could constitute a disability that could start that dialogue with an employer.
Well, such an interesting conversation so far. We do need to take a quick break. We're talking about the remote work surge that happened during the pandemic and what's coming next. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Cherished Possessions, a consignment shop working with homeowners in transition, Auburn Street in Portland, or cherishedpossessions.com. Options, a program of the Maine Office of Behavioral Health, connecting Mainers to treatment, recovery, and harm reduction resources. Details at knowyouroptions.me. And Maine Equal Justice, celebrating 25 years of increasing economic security, opportunity, and equity for people in Maine. MaineEqualJustice.org.
A house is worth what the market says it's worth unless appraisers are putting a thumb on the scale.
The training materials that they're using teach them to draw boundaries around demographically similar areas.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the racial real estate gap on Chicago's South Side. We will have that story for you, all the rest of the day's business news, also the numbers from Wall Street next time on Marketplace.
Join us for Marketplace this evening at 6:30 right here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of the Portland Bach Experience, a 10-day festival of innovative programs from full orchestral events to outdoor performances. The concerts will be performed live at venues throughout Midcoast and Southern Maine from June 11th through the 20th and include in-person and virtual viewing options. Maine Public members are eligible for 15% off tickets. For details on the Portland Bach Experience and the Maine Public member discount, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about remote work during the pandemic and what happens next as workplaces reopen. Joining me, Jason Harkins, who is Associate Dean of the University of Maine Business School. Tani Alvarez, an employment law specialist and partner with Verrill Dana. And David Chulo, CEO of Career Management Associates. Share your comments or questions. Email talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling. Post a comment to our Facebook page or to Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We'd love to hear from you. Joining us now is Mark Adams, who is President and CEO of Sebago Technics Incorporated. Thanks so much for calling in, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you.
Tell us about Sebago Technics. What do you do?
So Sebago Technics is an employee-owned civil engineering, surveying, and landscape architecture company with about 100 employee owners based here in southern Maine.
So tell us how being an employee-owned company affects the conversation about the remote work options and the future.
Well, we've for many years since becoming employee owned, we've been focused on the needs and the engagement of our employee owners. And certainly in 2020, thanks to all that we experienced with COVID, there was never a more important time to pay attention to the needs of our employee owners and their safety and the needs of their families, as well as make sure that we kept them as engaged as possible.
How did it work out, or how is it working out? You said about 100 employees. Are most working remotely?
No, actually, we have had most employees back since the middle of last summer. We brought folks back in a phased kind of approach as we were getting used to our new protocols and ways of working. But throughout the second half of 2020 and continuing into 2021, we have continued to sort of manage a remote work, provide that flexibility. We've sent people home over surges in COVID over the past 6 months or so during holiday peaks and so forth, just to keep safety as a priority.
Do you think that this experience has changed the way you as CEO of the company think about the workplace as you move into the future?
It most certainly has. We have for years been looking at options for greater flexibility. We've all of us in industries have seen this coming and increasing more and more. But there's no doubt that last year's experience accelerated both that thought as well as the implementation. And we're seeing that firsthand in our company and are in fact putting what we've learned and the tools that we've gained over the past year into action going forward.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Mark Adams, who is President and CEO of Sebago Technics. David Chulo, when you listen to Mark Adams, does that reflect what you're hearing from other CEOs and other managers around the state, that people are changing in ways that they will stick with, that they're not really going to back to where it was before?
I think it's a real mixed answer. The answer is yes, they've learned from it. That's 100%. 100%. I don't think anybody has said, no, I didn't learn from this. There's no question that their ability to be more open to things that they only thought about or only said maybe were possible have now suddenly become a reality or a possibility. I think that implementation is about whether or not it's going to be all, part, or none. Or the flexibility is potentially about giving more time off to do what you need to do. If your organization has to be at work because of what it does, and you have to all be together because that's the most effective way to run the business, then you should be at work. But maybe you provide more flexibility for people to leave and come and go and do different times. And you look at it a different way, which maybe you didn't think of in the past. So that's where I think the conversation is, not just because we're either going to be all home or going to do this hybrid, but it's also a conversation of saying, if we are coming back to work, how can we engage at a different level and how can we be more flexible with our teams out there? So what Mark is talking about is exactly right. It is a bigger conversation.
And speaking of a bigger conversation, Jason, and this is related to what David's saying, but not exactly. You learned that there, in your research that you've done this past couple of years, that there are some common factors to why remote work sometimes fails and why it, in other cases, succeeds. What are some of the factors that are common?
So there's maybe three major buckets that drive why remote work programs have historically failed. The first would be related to how are you managing communication, coordination, and culture? If you're not really managing those things well and doing those things intentionally, that can really drive down engagement, as David has said, and as Tani has said, and that engagement piece is really, really critical. The second is trust. And so we've kind of alluded a little bit to it, but trusting your employees and being able to build a culture of trust and engagement around that is important. And then the other thing is building these remote work environments requires really proactively creating the remote work environment. It's really important to remember that remote work is not working from home, right? That remote work is a different style of work than just saying, oh, well, I'll work from home on Friday. But if I'm a normal office employee, working from home on Friday is not being a remote worker. And so we need to really, if we're going to build a portion of our organization or all of our organization as a remote work culture, we have to really actively, proactively create that environment.
And you end up spending more time, don't you, Jason, on communication, which maybe isn't necessarily a bad thing. Somebody might say, oh, we waste so much time sending this many more emails, having this many more Zoom meetings. Somebody else might say, maybe we ought to have been communicating that well all along.
Yes. Yeah. The communication and the intentionality around it is really critical. And you do spend, I don't know that you spend more time, but you have to be more multifaceted. You can't just rely on everybody comes into the team meeting and we all have that conversation. You're going to use email. You're going to use the chat-like things, whether it's Slack or some other platform. And you're going to use a variety of video and audio meeting enablers, whether it's Zoom or what have you.
Yeah, just for the record, right now I am on Zoom, I am on Slack, I'm on email, and I'm on something called X Screen. We have something, an email here from Nikki. Where some work can be remote with no real impact to the outcomes, how can we encourage our employers to let folks stay remote? This is a major concern of mine as I see more traffic pickup. I know a lot of people are nervous to use transit, but keeping them home is a good way to reduce carbon footprints. And I do think that's part of the bigger conversation, whether you're talking about the environment or people's ability to exercise or spend time with their family. There's a question here that isn't just about the workplace, isn't there? And I'll turn to you, Tani, because I see you nodding.
I mean, it's a really big question. And it's interesting because I've been talking with specialists in this field, you know, for the last couple of months specifically about this. But as we see more and more entities becoming B Corps, and when we talk about what people value, going back to traditionally what employers used as quote unquote benefits to attract, retain individuals, they're different for different people. What I value is going to be different from my colleagues, hopefully not slightly different because of, you know, where we're working and creating a culture of people with similar values. But when we talk about diversity, there's going to be diversity of thought and those types of things. So making sure that we as an entity can define who we are and what we value and having those dialogues and discussions about carbon footprint, about ability to get to work and how we provide benefits to individuals that works for what they're doing. So if we previously had provided some type of a parking reimbursement or transit passes, how do we move forward in the future and still provide employees with benefits when they're not taking advantage of what we previously had provided becomes a really big question. And I don't know if there's an easy solution because every entity is going to be different. But if we go to the the question, I'm going to say the caller's question, having a dialogue, just like you pose the question, is important. Letting the employer see where you're coming from, what your values are, is going to open up that dialogue. And Jason used the perfect word, and it's trust. And I think it's something that employers have overlooked for a long time, saying, I don't know if they're going to work, or how am I going to maintain that relationship. If you don't trust your employees to do what's right for themselves and the business, then it's not going to be a lasting relationship anyways.
Tani, that's an interesting point you're making. And I'll turn to Jason for this, talking about the word trust. Do you think that if employers are bringing people back, employees might perceive that as my employer, my manager doesn't trust me? And if you believe that that might be a perception, how do employers overcome that? How do managers say to the employee, we want you back at work because of A, B, and C, and D, and it's not that we don't trust you?
Right, and this is exactly the question that employers are asking. Like, why do we convene in person if, as we have seen, productivity is at least on par, and in many cases up during the pandemic, and people feel like they've been able to do things. Well, one of the major employers in the state was saying in a conversation I had recently, you know, we want you to come back, not because we don't trust you and not because of anything that it's about us, right? They were saying, we want to bring you back because we don't want you to be out of sight and out of mind. We want to have you back, and we want to understand what's important to you. We want to make sure that you're developing professionally and that we're doing everything we can to support you and bring you along, because you're an important part of growing. Your growth is an important part of our business, and you matter as an employee. And so that becomes a big part of it, but it's about conveying that and not saying you got to come back because we're not really sure you were working in March or something like that.
We'll go to Ray, who's calling from Freeport. Hi, Ray. Go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer. I'm calling about, in my case, I've got to commute now 2 hours a day. I've got to hire a dog walker. And in our case, productivity was up during COVID-19. So can companies force you to return to work? And if so, is there a liability if there is a COVID breakout at the office?
Tani, that sounds like a question for you.
Well, that liability word. So if there were a breakout of COVID at the office, if you can show that it was based off of from the office, then workers' compensation would come in. And if it's related to the work, if people got COVID from work, then it's going to be a workers' compensation element, and there's going to be employer liability through workers' compensation if you're able to very directly show that connection. The ability to show that in many instances has been limited based off of proof issues. But more generally, what an employer can do and what they should do are different discussions. Can they require you to return to work? Yes, unless you contractually have an agreement with them that says you have a remote position and it will remain a remote position. So from a purely statutory perspective, they can force you to return to work unless you have a contract in which they promise that you would never work on site.
Ray, thank you so much for your question. We'll go to a question here from Marty. It's not black and white that an employee is an employee. It depends on the kind of work they do. Like, someone in high tech may need peace and quiet to keep the balls in the air, whereas people in sales may need to be chatty. Remote work may be more suitable and beneficial for some than others. David, this is kind of what we were talking about, is that there's not one conversation happening. There are a gazillion little conversations happening.
That's exactly right. And to that point, that's exactly what I was talking about earlier, is that companies are really looking at, what does that department do? What does that individual do? Is the job that individual doing essential to be at work? Essential, you know, to, can it be done at home? Is it more effective at home? Is it more effective at work? These are the big conversations. You know, the other part that's interesting to Jason and Tony's point, the conversation is also being had by owners. And remember, 85% of business in Maine is small business.
So, you know, while the big companies are doing it for thousands and, you know, thousands of people, you're talking about, you know, a small shop that has 10, 15, 25, 40, which is the backbone of what Maine is really driving in terms of the business. That's a little difference when you're a pillar in the community, when you're looking at an organization that has 6 or 7 people, and maybe that is, you know, or a business has 50 people, and that's the biggest employer in town. Those are big conversations that are being had by owners about what they need to do and whether they can send them home or whether they can't, and whether it's effective for the business overall and also their branding of the business. It's a bigger conversation here.
Well, we are talking about the remote work during the pandemic and what comes next. We'd love to hear from you. Have you been working remotely? Do you plan to stay that way, or are you looking forward to getting back to work, or have you already transitioned back to work and have some perspective on that? Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on our Instagram or Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Eastern Basements, a division of Maine-owned Eastern Mold Remediation, offering crawl space repairs and waterproofing, easternbasements.com. And Gnome Landscapes, dedicated to enhancing outdoor living in Maine with installation, design, masonry, and maintenance, gnomelandscapes.com.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. In 1862, the U.S. government gave away land to create land-grant universities, but it wasn't theirs to give. Millions of acres were taken from Native tribes.
We're talking about, you know, $495 million worth of real estate that affected at least 245 tribal nations.
Land grab universities next time on Here and Now.
Join us for Here and Now. That begins this afternoon at 2, right here on Maine Public Radio. Are you looking for something to do? Want to let people know about an event that your organization is sponsoring? Maine Public's Community Calendar is here to help. If you represent an organization and want to let listeners know about your event, be it virtual, outdoors, or otherwise, it's easy to enter the details on our online form, and it's easy to find things to do. You can search by type of event, date, or location, Maine Public's Community Calendar, bringing the people of Maine together with concerts, exhibits, workshops, and more. Visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling, and I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we are talking about remote work. About a third of the people in Maine, or households in Maine, have had somebody working remotely during the pandemic. To what degree will that be the way of the future? Joining me, David Chulo with Career Management Associates, Jason Harkins with UMaine's Business School, Tani Alvarez with Verrill Law. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, if you're quick, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet, post to Instagram or Facebook page also if you are quick. And before we get back into the conversation, David Chulo, tell us about your radio program.
So I do the HR Power Hour, which is a podcast as well as a radio program here locally on, another competitor, WLOB
okay.
Radio. And we obviously do this as nationally, and it goes on Spotify and everything else, but it's really educational HR radio. And I have my co-host on here as well, Tani Alvarez. We alternate every week. Tani handles a lot of the legal aspect, and I handle a lot of the HR aspect, and we have a great time doing the show every Saturday, 10 a.m.
Wonderful. And also, I mentioned that people could ask a question on Instagram. If you follow Maine Calling on Instagram, you have just got to see a tweet that somebody sent in today. Their cat listening to our program on remote work. The cats and dogs of this world like as much remote work as possible. They like to have us around. But on a much more serious note, I want to ask you, Jason, about your research, especially your research in terms of men and women. I have read in national newspapers that we're seeing more and more women in a position where when they are asked to go back to work, they say, no, thank you. I'm not going back to the office. Is that a trend here in Maine as well, as far as you can tell?
I don't have any good statistics about this, but it does seem to be the case that Maine is following with the rest of the nation here, that because women are disproportionately likely to have responsibilities related to childcare or other other aspects of kind of taking care of the home in addition to their working, that becomes a big barrier. I mean, today, certainly in my part of the world, we've had my kids out of school for 2 days because of heat days, right? And so if you are able to work remotely, that can be accommodated. But if you can't work remotely and there's a return to work, no, you've got to come back in. Are you now back to taking sick days where you might throughout the pandemic have been able to still work remotely? So I think that we are probably in line with the national trends would be my guess. And certainly that does seem to be an overwhelming driving narrative going forward.
Tani and David, I'm going to ask you both this. Tani, I'll start with you. As you think about these issues and talk about them every week on your radio show, do you believe we are seeing sort of a seismic shift that the workplace for people in their 20s now is going to be dramatically different than it was for those of us who are in our 50s now?
I think when we're talking about those two age demographics, yes, we're seeing a big shift, but we're also seeing a shift or requirement that people in management positions who most likely are boomers or maybe Gen X, that they have had to change their management style, that they were individuals who required something in paper, who didn't like typed notes on PDFs. Those, and this sounds very stereotypical what I'm saying, but it's part of dealing with the generational divide, both with the technology, both with how people work and how they feel as though they're being successful. So we are seeing both sides of the equation have to change how they do business. So we see younger generations who need to either meet or help to work with an organization to create a culture that works for them. And we also see a change in management structure. So a seismic shift, I hesitate to say that anything seismic happens from a corporate environment, but I do think that we're seeing a much swifter change in how people work and do business with each other.
All right. So Gen Xers and boomers having to change quickly, David.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, if you think about the fact that technology continues to evolve at a faster rate every single year, and that the way we do things is just changing. And that does create some challenges for senior leadership, which is typically in the Gen X and baby boom generation. And what is interesting about it is Jason and Tony both talked about trust. Trust goes both ways. Generationally, trust has to be understood that employees need to trust their leaders as well in terms of making decisions. And it has to be this conversation that provides this trust factor in both aspects. The other part I'd mention in terms of generation is you asked for seismic. I don't know if the word is seismic, but I do think if you look at what it will be in 50 years from now, it is certainly going to be seismic for what it is today.
Jason, I want to ask you a couple questions, but we'll start with this generational question. One of the things that I know people are concerned about are young people entering the workforce during this time. Jason, you have students who I'm assuming are in their young 20s trying to get their first or second jobs. What does this mean for them as far as the ability to have mentors in their workplace if they do manage to land a job right out of college or graduate school?
Well,
high school. Yeah.
Right. It is one of the biggest challenges is onboarding these new employees. How do you build those relationships, manage acculturation? Because if I were to go remote today, and I've been at the university for 13 years now, I've established relationships, I've built mentorships, mentors and mentees. I've got a whole process there. But if you're coming on board, those become real challenges. And it comes down to an organization being really intentional. It's very easy for that employee, that 21, 22, 25-year-old to think, oh, I want to work remotely because of X, Y, and Z that it accommodates in my life. But they forget about the things that you miss out on if you don't have those connection points to the people who are going to help you develop both personally and professionally.
And let's talk about later in the career. And say you're working for a company that is flexible and allows people to work from home and allows people to come into the office. I'm guessing that there might be some built-in advantages, even if companies work hard not to have them, where the person who's in-house, the person who's sitting, you know, 20 feet away from the manager is going to have an advantage over the folks working from home, even if the folks working from home are more talented or contributing more to the company. All three of you nodded when I said that. So Jason, I'll start with you. How does a company that's thinking about a flexible future also think about fairness?
Well, and this is really a huge issue for organizations that are going to accommodate ongoing, some remote, some hybrid, and some in-person employees, because without a great deal of intentionality and a variety of checks and balances, it's just so much easier to perceive that the person you can stop in to their office down the hall is doing more work or doing better, or you have a better sense of what they're doing than the person that you hop onto Slack with or you hop onto Microsoft Teams. And it is overwhelmingly and empirically linked with better performance appraisal, if not necessarily better performance.
And that's an example, Tani, of where somebody who's choosing to be at home because they would like to physically be there when the child gets off the school bus might have a disadvantage.
Absolutely. This is going to be a time, you know, from my vantage point to move like forward in what Jason's saying as a potential solution. Manager training is so important. Managers have your manager's lack of awareness of their implicit bias for providing higher reviews for the people who are in the office who appear as though they're more committed to the organization versus an individual who is at home when someone gets off the bus or who has to take a day off when a child gets sick. Or let's even talk about people who don't have children but who have other priorities or other aspects of their life, which may not be interfering with their ability to do their job, but may limit their 24-hour a day, 7-day a week availability. So this is really a top-down discussion. We need to make sure that managers understand all the areas in which claims for disparate impact, disparate treatment, checks, balances, like Jason said, looking over reviews and making sure that we don't see any trends where either women are receiving lower performance scores, whether it's people working from home receive lower performance scores. We're going to have to check and balance all of our managers.
And David, I'm thinking back to what you said before, that may be possible to be that intentional if you're a large company with a human resources manager or even a human resources staff. But you have five people and you're just trying to do your best and your expertise is not human resources. The kinds of things we're talking about are going to be challenging.
There's no question that there's a lot of challenge. But one of the things we're seeing even small companies talk about is being intentional, to Jason's point, that to being intentional to saying, we're going to have, for example, once a week, a collaboration day where everybody is going to be in once a week. And we're going to make sure that during that day, we set up times where everybody gets together and make sure that we talk. That's an example of being intentional and saying, we're going to make sure that we have time set aside that everybody still will get together and see one another and have those dialogues. The other thing is that it's changing the way you have to performance reviews or think about it. You know, right now, if you're talking remote, what you base a performance review on, if you don't see them very often, is metrics, results, information that comes to you. Did you get in on time? Was it thorough? Was it done? And that's easy stuff. That's kind of the check the box stuff that we do. But then you have the people that are in the office that get to talk to and feel and touch and have these conversations with, and they may get a little more warm touch. That happens. You have to be able to talk about these review periods. Matter of fact, we just did a training on this 2 weeks ago with another organization about talking about reviews in a different way. And you have to metrically change it from not only the metrics are important, but also understanding what's important to your values, your mission, your core values, and your accountability.
An email here from Cindy. What about privacy for the customers when people are working at home? Is someone working on their laptop and the dining room table and processing my medical records while kids are running around and their partner is looking over their shoulder? Are their work-related passwords protected? Do they log off when they leave the computer? I'm going to go back to you, Tani.
Those are all amazing questions. And there are things when we're talking about intentional, like Jason and David just said, you have to have those in place beforehand. And when the pandemic pushed everyone to work to virtual working, a lot of people didn't have that in place. And if you still don't have it in place, that needs to be a priority, because you are losing confidential data. You likely have employees who now, once the country, the state has been opening up, they're working from different locations. They might be going into a coffee shop or a restaurant to do work. And just having a confidentiality provision in your handbook is not enough. I don't know how many times I talk to an employer who says, yep, no, look, it's right here. Everything has to be confidential. And I say to them, that's not a contract. That means nothing. Actually, look on your first page. It says, this handbook is not a contract. So like all you have is a statement of hope, dream, and desire in your handbook. You need a contract. You need a contract that says these are your obligations for confidentiality. This is what you will do if your laptop gets stolen or if your phone gets stolen. You need to invest in an IT team. And if you can't do that internally, you need to externally contract for it so that that device can be wiped immediately so that you can take all the precautions, because I promise you in the long run, depending on the type of data that you're dealing with, if you have any customer data, if you have any client patient data, on the opposite end, when that gets stolen or when you have a ransomware demand, it's going to cost you so much more. And I mean, I know we don't have an IT specialist.
I can tell you're passionate about this, Tani.
But I mean, this, I can't even describe to you how much this costs our clients and how, you know, if I can emphasize anything, this security is so important because there's very little I can do to help you later other than rack up very large attorney's bills for us trying to either get your information back, work with a third party vendor. Yeah, it's huge.
Thank you for your passion about this. I want to read a quick email from Donald in Nobleboro. He wants to have a shout out to St. Andrews in Newcastle for their program Friends in Service Helping. Donald's disabled, and he says they drive him all over to help with his daily needs and services, and he's calling it remote work, literally, and he wants to recognize them. We just have a few seconds left, Jason, and I know you wanted to mention the Maine Graduate and Professional Center.
Absolutely. So the Maine Business School is part of the Graduate and Professional Center, where business, law, and public policy professionals and faculty are working together to try and think through how do we address the most complex business problems that are happening today, like the show that we're talking about, as well as going into the future. And I think we really are set up well in the state to be thought leaders on those topics and to bring forward real meaningful expertise with Maine leading the way.
Thank you all three for being with us. The voice you just heard, Jason Harkins, Associate Dean at the Maine Business School at the University of Maine. Tani Alvarez, a partner at Verrill Dana, specializing in employment law, and David Chulo, CEO of Career Management Associates. This program is part of Maine's Evolving Economy, a series of Maine Calling shows focusing on the shifts in Maine's economy caused by the pandemic. Today's sound engineer, Bill Johnson, Jonathan Smith, and Cindy Hahn produce Maine Calling. And a quick note, the list of books recommended on last Friday's program is now up on the webpage, mainecalling.org. Tomorrow on the program, tourism. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.